Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Infinite Potential podcast. Today, we're with Silas Lees. He's a best-selling author, entrepreneur, and investor. Silas has just released his second book titled Love is the New Religion. He's a public speaker and personal development trainer, along with being a very close friend. Silas, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Alex. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about your new book. So it's just been released on Kindle, I believe, paperback coming soon.
That's absolutely correct, yeah. So it's been a bit of a journey to get there in the end. It's taken practically 3 years of writing and revisiting and editing to get it into the sort of finished article, if you like. But it's been a real journey writing it, and having the resilience to sort of keep going back and picking it up to get it finished has been a real mission, but I'm glad it's done.
Good. How long did it take to write?
About 3 years, and I can tell you a little bit more about the background of the whole, how the book came about, if you'd
find interest.
Yeah. So, essentially, wound the clock back to 2015. I was not in a particularly good place. I was pretty down, pretty depressed about life. I just stepped away from a pretty close circle of friends and felt pretty alone in that space. And I was kind of looking for, I was in this space of, you know, what is life really all about? Where's the meaning of life? What's going on? And I think at that point, there was I found my way into the path of ayahuasca. So took the ayahuasca journey back in, I think it was July of 2015. Mm-hmm. And absolutely blew my mind, had some incredible experiences. And off the back of that, that's where the title of the book came from. And that's where I got this introduction to Love is the New Religion. And it really was initially as a sort of... To my mind, this whole idea that in the press and the media, we've got certain sections of religion which have been targeted for terrorism and goodness knows what else. And to me, that didn't seem to ring true with my own personal experiences of meeting, you know, people of certain religions. And so it really kind of struck me as odd that if people who are of a certain religious persuasion are then practicing what they've been taught within the religion, which is love thy neighbor, don't do anything to anybody else that you wouldn't want done to you, and treat others as you want to be treated. It really just struck me odd that people would then be out causing harm or would be having war and all that sort of great stuff in the world. If people, you know, if the majority of people in the world are devoted to one religion or another. And so that really just got me thinking, well, surely this is the whole tenement of most religions is love fundamentally for one another and for yourself. And so why don't we create something that is all-encompassing, all-inviting, which is the umbrella of love as a concept and as a religion. So getting people back to the original message and teachings of their religion, what they'd originally learned, and how to sort of bring everybody together rather than this sort of divide and conquer agenda or separation agenda that I feel is running in the world at the moment.
So did you start writing that after you took ayahuasca before?
It was actually after, so in August 2015 when I started writing, and it was off the back of that experience that I'd had during ayahuasca of those 3 days, which was quite mind-blowing.
Can you talk about that?
More than happy to. I mean, for me to find myself doing something like ayahuasca is for those who know me or don't know me, perhaps, should I say, I've not been one of these people that's into taking drugs other than, you know, alcohol and what have you. I've never really liked the idea of being out of control, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, whatever. And so it just seemed to be where I was in my life at that time. It was the right thing to do. And I sort of came out of there with a new sort of insight into life. During the course of that 3 day retreat, I very much experienced what I would call oneness, that sort of utopia that all the enlightened masters talk about. And I'm not saying I'm an enlightened master, I'm really not drawing that parallel at all, but to really experience that over the course of the 3 days and to get an insight into, you know, coming from a place of unconditional love, which was just the most incredible feeling, and to being that for probably 5 or 6 hours on the one night in particular, really got me to look at life in a perhaps very different way than I had done previously. And so, yeah, that was the experience during ayahuasca. And then off the back of that, that's when we started sort of writing the book. And I've got to say, if I'm being honest with myself, I didn't write most of that book. And I probably shouldn't say this, but the main process that I adopted was to try and get myself out of the way, so I wouldn't start writing until maybe 11 o'clock at night sometimes. I'd sit there, maybe have one or two beers, put some great music on my headphones, and then just sit there and whatever came through got on the page. And it was quite funny because sometimes I'd go back and I'd read afterwards what I'd written. I didn't actually do any of the editing until I got most of the way through the book, and I started to go back and read. I was like, this is actually really good. And that's how I could tell that it wasn't actually me that wrote it, you know. So yeah, it was quite a really interesting experience.
Yeah. So the new book, it's out on Kindle. When is the date for release for the paperback?
I'm hopefully going to get it all lined up for July the 1st. So we're going to be out there 1st of July for both parts of the book, which would be great for the Kindle and paperback version. Okay. Fantastic.
And there's a few videos that I've seen that knocking about that have linked in well with the book.
Yeah, thank you. Well, so the idea was just talking to a few different people about the sort of life journey that I've had and the experience that I've had and the way that I've been very fortunate to meet quite a few people along the way who have some very interesting knowledge, and knowledge which is not part of the mainstream. And that I've accumulated that knowledge. And then when I talk to people like you, Alex, you know, you've got the same sort of level of thinking. You've got certain insights that I think have helped you to, shall we say, deal with life in a very, in a way that's very healthy, shall we say. And yet I reflect back on my previous life of where I was, and I didn't have those tools, I didn't have those techniques, I didn't have that level of thinking. And so I thought, well, why not put together just a collection of videos, free information for people that kind of reflect on messages that are contained within the book and also wider thoughts as well. And just sort of share that online for people and hopefully add some value to people with what we've got to say there.
Nice. Well, it's definitely added value to me, so thank you for that.
It's very kind.
You've been in business all your life, really, mainly in the property industry. How is that sort of linked in with each other?
With the book as well?
Yeah, with that way of thinking, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I know Ayahuasca was a big influence on a lot of people who take it. Did that sort of shift your business values, or were the business values already sort of moved before you had took part in that?
No, that's a really interesting question. So if I reflect back on the last sort of 30, nearly 40 years of my life, I think growing up as my father was self-employed, so he was very much a businessman in many, many ways. But I think there was an element of him that thought I could never really make it in business because I was not, I didn't have that sort of tough edge to myself. So, you know, I've just watched a film called The Dog's Purpose, and I've just spent the entire film crying because that's just me. This is like real sensitive side to me. And I think as I've got older, I've realized that to be in business, you don't have to be cutthroat. You don't have to be, you know, out to sell your grandmother for a pound just to try and, you know, get an edge on the competition. And so for me, I think as time has gone on, I've become more authentically true to who I am at the core and tried to bring those values through. Do I want to rip people off? Absolutely not. Do I want to offer outstanding value to people? Absolutely. That's just my mantra, and people would suggest that there might be some self-worth issues going on there, you know, in terms of not claiming your true value and everything else. And to me, I think I've got to a point of looking at life and going, well, okay, if I've got a certain amount of money that's enough for me to live my life, do I need excess millions of pounds and all the rest of it? Yeah, it would be nice. I'll give you a list of 20 things I would spend it on right now. But the point being, I think having those values, having the desire to give more and more value to people in a heart-based way is what rings true to me and makes me happier and allows me to sleep at night rather than going out there trying to rip people off and, you know, claim every last penny for myself.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think I've noticed myself a big shift since I started business, say, 2011. I've noticed a big shift in people moving more away from consumerism and just buying stuff to a more conscious approach, especially in business, where we're just more service driven and a lot less masculine, not probably the right word, a lot less masculine driven.
Yep.
Which obviously is divine masculine as well, which we don't want to get rid of that, but yep. Maybe the ego driven ways of doing business has sort of shifted, which I think can only be a good thing, to be fair. We've noticed,
I agree.
You know, agriculture, I've noticed a bit of a shift in agriculture. There's more organic food coming to the market and things like that. So I think that can only be a good thing.
Agreed.
That sorts of leads into Your Love is the New Religion book. I think it's all going in one direction, which is good.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, I think the other thing that's really interesting to note as well is this rise of technology in people's lives, and that allows us to do so much more than we probably could have done before. And writing for me, let's be fair, it's not really a profitable activity. You can spend 3 years sweating over putting a book together, and God knows how much money that book may or may not make. But the point is that the enjoyment that I've had from that journey is a massive thing. And I think with technology now, that you can you and I can put a book together, you can publish it through Smashwords or indie publishers and what have you, and none of that really costs a huge amount of money. And I think what I've noticed more and more is a lot of people are taking their own future into their own hands. And they might not be doing it full time, they might be doing it part time, but they're definitely taking a step away from, the mainstream view of, the Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, get pissed on the weekend and spend all the money you've earned over the last 5 days, go back to work again on Monday and repeat the same process. They've moved away from that, and they're going, actually, well, I want to do a podcast, or I want to write a book, or I want to become a photographer, or whatever else it might be. And that we've now got access to technology that makes life so much easier for us all to do. And I think that can only be a great thing.
Yeah. I think that's maybe an evolution of consciousness as well, to be fair. It's sort of expressing itself through technology. Yep. And the intent behind using it is of man's mind, which could either get in the way or progress it further and quicker.
Absolutely right.
If you could just look at the name of that book you've written, is Love is the New Religion. That presupposes that mainstream religion doesn't promote that in its core. Would that be right in assuming?
That's a heck of a presupposition. Here's my take on mainstream religion, and it is only my take. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I'm wrong in any way, shape, or form.
But you've got to believe. You've got to agree with me.
Look, I'll give you my take, and we can see whether the two intertwine here. But my view is with religion is, if you look at it from the context of what it is, essentially it is worship of a higher being, seemingly. And we have man's interpretation and human interpretation of worship of a higher being and all the facets that come with that. Now, if we look at the concept of Christianity, which is probably the religion I know a little bit more about than everything else, as Christianity, we have this whole thing of, you go to church, and if you don't go to church, then you go to hell. Okay, or if you're not a good person, then you go to hell, right? So you have to go to church in order to be cleansed of some sins that you've somehow done. You were born a sinner. I mean, okay, I just got here to the planet. How am I already a sinner? What went wrong there? But you're going into this man-made environment, which you're going into church to then ensure that you get a place in heaven and that you're not sent to hell. Now, reflecting on marketing tactics, for example, the fear of missing out, FOMO, so if I don't go to church, then I don't get my place. I don't get my place in heaven. There's this massive fear of going out, of missing out, and maybe that's the reason why people found their way into religion. But religion, is following a man-made structure in the worship of a higher being. And the way I look at it is, we are already part of that higher being. There's the part within us, the soul, the people talk about the spirit, whatever you want to call it. If you're completely agnostic, your very heartbeat. And what's the difference between a corpse and a living being is there's some essence of you that is driving you every single day. And so if you are part of the whole, if you're part of God, which we, on the spiritual path, we believe that we already are, then as long as you're behaving with good intention, there isn't really a need to visit a place of worship on a weekly or daily basis in order to become more than or wholer or a more whole person, or in order to secure your place in heaven, because you're already the part of the whole that's experiencing life and growing from it anyway. Mm-hmm. And that might be a bit of a convoluted way of explaining it, but to me, that there's no reason that you need to be involved in this. If I follow these 10 commandments, then I'll lead a virtuous life. Don't get me wrong, there's some truth in those. But it really is a case of, for me, I feel like I can conduct myself in a loving manner, in a manner that is, try to do my very best for other people, whoever they might be. And I feel that is more than just for my existence on this planet.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Do you think it's very fear-driven?
Religion. I do think there's a lot of that. And I do think, you know, what I see playing out in the media right now is horrendous. I don't think it's good. I think we've got, you know, people being judged on the basis of the religion that they follow for no reason. I mean, you've got people in America being killed because they follow a certain religion for no justification other than they follow that religion. I just think that's disgraceful. The fundamental tenets of practically every religion in the world, as I say, follow the, you know, love thy neighbor principle. But it seems to be that that's okay as long as you're, you know, you're claiming to be religious. And this is what I see a lot in religion, is that people will say, oh, I'm of XYZ religion. Okay, great. So, and then they'll try to impress that value upon me and say that you should be of this same religion. And then you see people acting completely against the teachings of their religion. So if their religion says you shall not drink alcohol, then they're drinking alcohol. And I'm like, well, so which way is it? You know, are you either part of this religion and you're doing that and you're doing it completely in my view, or you're not. But then to try and force that view upon somebody else when you're not following the tenets of your religion is, to me, is disingenuous. And that's why I'd rather say, look, I'm not subscribing to any particular religion here. I'm here having my own journey. And my view is, you know, love is something that I believe needs to be spread more in the world. I really do. It's what all the great masters have always said throughout the generations of human existence on this plane. So why not spread more love? It's what everybody can identify with. You know, even somebody who is fiercely God opposed can identify with loving something or someone in their life, hopefully.
Yeah, I think there's a human love and a divine love.
Agreed. Agreed.
Like loving, how could you say that? Loving a sandwich. You could possibly even go as far as saying loving a family member may not be seen as divine love in the sense that it's not completely unconditional and. It's not in the heart, it's more of the head.
Agreed.
A conditioned type of love, maybe.
Yep.
So how would you say that you get into that real love with a capital L?
You see, the way I would answer that is I believe as human beings we're all fatally flawed with our own insecurities and our own, the way that we've been raised and all of our life experience has taught us that shall we say, for a human being to love another human being, that does come with a whole bunch of conditions. Unfortunately, it's just the way it is. We've been taught that love is conditional. We behave ourselves, we get love and all the rest of it. That's great. But if you want to experience unconditional love, I'm going to step into the animal kingdom. And you look at a dog and the way a dog behaves and the unconditional love that a dog gives you on a daily basis, it is just one of the best experiences in the world you can get. And I saw something great on Facebook, which was it to always be the kind of person that your dog thinks that you are.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think that's phenomenal. And to me, that is how you get more of a glimpse of unconditional love, of a higher level of love than you ever would with, you know, two human beings. And don't get me wrong, it can exist. You know, you see, I think that's why we're all in awe of, you know, when we see two people that are crazily in love with each other and that are, you know, as unconditionally loving as far as human experience will allow that to be. It's a wonderful thing to witness. It really is.
Yeah.
And if you can get a glimpse and an insight into that element of unconditional love, you'll absolutely know it when you've touched it, because it is, to me, mind-blowing. Yeah.
I mean, the only time I've ever felt like I've experienced that, is when who I perceived myself to be wasn't there.
Okay. Yep.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when the ego had completely stripped itself,
yep.
That was all that was left.
Right.
So it's not actually trying to get anything, it's removing everything else.
I can agree with that, actually, because the only time I've experienced it previously was when I was in a complete breakdown. I was sobbing my heart out over something or other, which is unusual for me, as we've already talked about. But I was with a partner at the time and just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And for a split second, I felt that unconditional love, that connection. And I think it would be, you know, as you've articulated there, I've dropped the mask. I've walked away from who I thought I should be in that moment. And it's behavior that I completely wasn't expecting. And in that moment, it came through. And yeah, it was phenomenal. Mm. Very, very memorable.
Yeah. We've had a lot of conversations in the past. We talked about religion and and maybe some of the other things that have been perpetuated onto mankind, maybe not for the greater good.
Okay.
One of them, we'll start with one of them. We'll start with the health system. We've got a couple of mutual friends on social media and we follow those quite religiously. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand with the belief that modern medicine is actually there for the greater good, and or do you think it's mainly a money-driven, ego-driven, maybe even dark area?
Wow. Okay. So what I've loved about talking with you, Alex, over the last couple of years, you've really brought my. I have lived in quite a black and white world. I have lived in this world of, you know, it's either good or it's bad, you know. And you've really highlighted this point of duality to me, you know, there's good and bad in everything. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think with, you know, with modern medicine, have there been pioneers in the past that have gone about their daily lives and thought, hang on, what can we do to stop somebody suffering from X, Y, and Z disease, or, you know, from a certain affliction or a certain ailment? And systems and medicines or practices have been developed over that period of time that have sought to take away pain or sought to enhance somebody's life in some great way. And that's fantastic when, you know, when there's good intention behind it. I absolutely do believe there are certain surgeries, certain drugs, certain practices that are helpful towards people. Because not everybody, in my view, is able to access a higher level of understanding or thinking, which might allow them to experience alternative medicines, which are now named alternative or holistic medicines or those sorts of things, or even, as we've seen with some revelations of spontaneous healing, when people have hit a certain level of enlightenment, a certain level of a certain pinnacle in their life, all of a sudden they've gone into complete remission. And there's a great video on YouTube, unfortunately I can't remember the lady's name, but you know, this lady explains how she had huge cancerous tumors all over her body and she effectively felt like she was dying and dying and dying, and then all of a sudden came back.
Anita Morjani, I think.
There we are. Yeah. Anita Morjani.
Dying to be me.
There we are, even better. Yeah. So I mean, just go and watch that video. Now what bothers me about Western medicine or modern medicine is that experience isn't being, to my knowledge, isn't being looked at as much as to say, well, what happened here? We had somebody who was terminally ill, all of a sudden was cured. This could be offered to millions of people worldwide. Why is it not being offered? I don't know the answer to that. But the point being, this is not just an isolated example. There are many, many examples of spontaneous healing of people that have been terminally ill and have literally come back better, healthier than ever. And so I do think that's something that Western medicine would benefit from. The other thing that bothers me significantly is people who have practiced medicine, not all of them, but most people who have practiced medicine have become very, very, very insular in their worldview. And it is only when they've unfortunately experienced something bad happening to them or a person they care about or somebody they love, have they ever looked at exploring another avenue. And sometimes that can be the difference between life and death.
So the pain needs to get big enough in order for them to change.
Unfortunately. But the problem is, during that career of 5, 10, 15, 20 years of being a medical professional, they may have unwittingly forced that view upon other people who their advice may not have been appropriate for them in that moment.
Yeah. There's a great story in the newspaper this morning. I don't read the newspaper, by the way. It was just an article.
Yep.
And it said about a rugby player's wife who had lymphoma. Mm-hmm. They give her between 4 weeks and 12 months to live.
Right.
And I mean, to me, that's ludicrous that they've given. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that people should be able to tell anybody else how long they've got to live, because people buy that, don't they?
Agreed.
They live into that.
Yep.
But then they, even then they said 4 weeks to 12 months. I mean, basically saying we have no idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Essentially what they said.
Absolutely.
And anyway, within 3 months, she started a course of cannabis oil. She was fasting, regular fasting, removed all meat and dairy, went a lot more to a vegan diet, and within 9 months, she had a cold.
Right.
So she went to the doctor, and they tested her for the lymphoma, and it had gone.
Interesting, right.
And that was in Sky News, to be fair. So that's good reporting in my opinion. That's good journalism, yeah.
It is, yeah.
I think things are changing. I've got to say, I think the awareness of people are, it sort of switched to a more holistic lifestyle now, which is good. What about vaccines?
Okay, I wonder whether we're going to get onto this topic or not. But so for me, vaccines, I'm going to say up front, first of all, that vaccines is a very, very, very sensitive issue. In fact, I think out of all the treatment of medicine, vaccines is the one that causes the most outrage and the most uproar from people with different opinions. And all I'm going to say is, you know, I'm no medical expert. So my views are not necessarily my views. My views are views that have been formulated from my own research and from also listening to people who know what they're talking about. And I'm talking about neurosurgeons, for example. Now, the issue with vaccines is that there's a great theory with vaccines, which is, you know, in order to make people immune from something, what we need to do is we need to introduce that organism or that disease or that bacteria or virus, whatever it might be, into a person's body. And that person's body can then develop an immune response to that. And the theory is all well and good. The problem is the way the virus is then put into the system bypasses all of the body's natural protection against infection. So that to me is the first issue. The second issue is I'm highly skeptical of the level of ingredients that are put into a vaccine. And again, for anybody who wants to, you know, doubt my word, etc., it's a very, very simple equation, okay? If you're going to have a vaccine or you're getting a vaccine for yourself or a family member or even a pet, my guidance in this is to literally just go to the practitioner and say to them, I want to see a copy of the vaccine insert. And this is not just a leaflet about the vaccine. We're talking about the full manufacturer's insert with the vaccine. And this is probably going to run to 40 or 50 pages of A4 if you were to print it out in normal font type, but it's very, very finely written. And the document's going to be probably about an A1 piece of paper, and have a read of it. And you look at the possible side effects of receiving that vaccine, look at the ingredients, and obviously they're going to be in very technical chemistry type language, look it all up on the internet. And when you start to do the research and you start to look at things like autism, and people say, well, autism's not linked to vaccines. Okay, well, if you've got heavy metals in a vaccine and that's been injected into a human body, and then autism is very similar to heavy metal poisoning, to me, there seems like an incredible correlation there. And don't get me wrong, your body can become toxic from mercury overdose through breathing in coal-fired power station fumes, for example. That's something that Dr. Mark Hyman has absolutely has experienced himself. But when you look at that ingredients list and you look at the possible side effects of a vaccine, which, let's be honest, they were direct effects of having that vaccine, because you wouldn't have had those side effects if you didn't take the vaccine. You've got to weigh up the risk reward. And for me, I'm not buying that anymore. It just doesn't work for me.
Right. Because there are incidences, I mean, I can't remember the exact figure, but it's in the billions in compensation that the FDA in America, the Food and Drug Association, have had to pay out to vaccine damages, victims. Yep. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you probably know more about this than me, but the late 80s, early 90s, a law was passed to say that vaccine manufacturers cannot be sued.
I believe this to be the case. I couldn't quote you the law, etc., but I do understand that vaccine manufacturers are immune to prosecution. The other thing to look at is particularly in America, who seem to be a little bit more open with their court cases and practice that's gone on. If you look at what's happened in America, it is that there are court records that document a link between vaccine injury and the level of compensation that's been paid out, as you quite rightly point out there. And that to me speaks volumes, you know, that people are having these injections and then there is some kind of bodily reaction. Because let's be honest, all of a sudden your body is in its natural state. And my belief is that you know, that particularly as a baby that's just being born, providing the mother is reasonably healthy, you know, that body, that being coming through the mother is in perfect state. And now all of a sudden we're going to start injecting this toxin of chemicals into their body, into their bloodstream, which I believe that the statistic is something like, if you or I were to go to the doctor and have the amount of injections that a baby would have,
percentage wise,
yeah, we'd be having like 38 injections in one hit. And then we wonder why the baby, you know, or the child or the teenager goes through certain levels of you know, reaction to that. And so I certainly wouldn't want 38 injections put into my body. I wouldn't want one injection if I can help it, to be fair. And it's not that I'm completely against the idea of, you know, vaccines and everything else. As I say, the theory is very, very good. I just don't believe that the practical way that it's being implemented is healthy. And that's really, really my take on it. So the evidence is there for people to look at. As I say, don't take my word for it. Get out there, do the research online within, you know, a day or two, which, you know, if you're thinking about your own health or the health of your children, within a day or two of doing internet research, you're going to find all of this information that we've talked about today. And I'm going to highly encourage people to do that rather than going, oh, vaccines are, you know, what about, you know, the reduction in
polio,
for example, or whatever else it might be. And if you look at the statistics of death rates per thousand over the course of the last 100 years, that's another interesting thing. Pull up some graphs on that and have a look at that and see when vaccines were actually introduced versus the falling death rate or the, you know, falling infection rate of people that have gone through all of that. And then vaccines have been introduced at a very, very late stage when our bodies have already learned how to deal with a lot of those instances.
Some of the most recent mystics of the 20th century, I don't know if you've heard of Rudolf Steiner.
Yep.
He wrote a book called The Occult Anatomy of Man.
Okay.
So the hidden anatomy of man, yeah?
Yep.
And he's got a full chapter on vaccines there, and he says it's one of the biggest agendas that has been perpetrated on mankind forever.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very, very switched on human being. So,
yep. I'd love to disagree with that, and unfortunately, based on my research, I can't. You know, I do agree with what's been said. It's a very unpopular topic, you know, and the problem that we have when we're talking to other people, particularly parents, is that they will have already made the decision whether or not to vaccinate their child. And so if you look at the process in practical terms, you know, loving parents, I experience this with my dog. Okay, so my dog comes into my life, loving to bits, absolutely wonderful being. Now, I don't want anything harmful to happen to that puppy. Okay, so I do my research around vaccines. Now, had I already vaccinated the puppy, my ego would already buy into the decision that I've made, and now I have to defend that decision because otherwise I've got to admit that I'm wrong. And that's the big thing. So when we're talking to parents and they've already vaccinated their kids, the worry is then, oh my God, have I harmed my child in some way? And there's a very real possibility that could have happened. In fact, there's some research by neurosurgeons that suggests that, you know, these vaccines are so toxic that they're already getting into our brain, and you know, most of us are running around with half a brain because we've got that much toxic overload of heavy metals in there. And yet we don't realize it because we're functioning on a day-to-day basis and we're all okay. But are we? How do we know?
Well, that's true.
Because we've only got...
If normality becomes insane, you believe insane's normal, right?
Exactly.
They've actually found some aborted fetal tissue in some vaccines as well. I mean, anyone would think you're living in a satanic cult.
Okay, well... If I just touch on that briefly, because the other thing that bothered me when I was doing some research around the vaccine issues was how the virus is cultured, and it has to be cultured in living tissue. And these cells, I believe, now again, scientists over here will probably be screaming at me, but I believe the cells are allowed to duplicate and replicate a certain number of times. After a certain number of times, those cells actually become cancerous because there's too much duplication going on, and it has to be human tissue that the cells are duplicated on. So that to me raises a massive question mark. Am I then injecting cancerous human fetal tissue into my body or the body of people or beings that I love? that to me would raise a major question mark.
So so based on this conversation, we'll probably come to the conclusion that vaccines are bad. Based on this conversation.
Okay.
Make of it what you want.
Yep.
Why would they, in inverted commas, do that?
So, you know, there's a number of different ways to look at this, and I don't want to give away the book in any way, shape, or form. You see, a lot of people say it's about money. So this whole idea of this hierarchy in society, if you like, and a lot of people say, oh, it's all about money, it's all about control. I actually believe there's a deeper reason than that, and I believe it's energetic. You know, Einstein was a very clever fellow. He said everything in life is energy, right? And I believe there's actually a more an energetic agenda that's actually going on rather than actually a monetary agenda. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if you wanted to feed a being, shall we say, an energy being, you would feed it a certain level of energy. And if you can manipulate, if that energy happens to thrive on negative energy, dark energy, bad energy, or loose energy, as I believe it's called in certain areas, the only way to do that is to elicit more and more of that energy from the human population. Now, if somebody's physically fit, strong, able-bodied, well-nourished, and has no trauma in their life or has dealt with all the trauma that they've been through, you're not going to get any of that negative or bad energy from that person unless you particularly try to manipulate their personal circumstances. But sounds like an awful scenario, but if you inject somebody with a horrible vaccine that that isn't in that child's best interest, and that child is then crippled for the rest of their life, I mean, look at the amount of energy, negative energy, that's going to create from the child's life and from the parent's life and from the immediate family surrounding it. It's a tremendous amount of negative energy. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if you asking me for my views on light and dark, that's my view on light and dark. That's how I believe that it actually operates, is that there's this agenda to elicit darker energies, the negative experience energies from us as human beings. Mm-hmm. And that's what feeds the dark side, if you like.
Right. That's pretty deep.
It's just my take. I'm not saying I'm right. No. But, you know, I've looked at this for a number of different years. And again, we have got this concept of duality, light and dark, and you know, good and bad in everything. And that's not to say that I believe that, you know, there's this whole sort of cloak and dagger stuff going on all the time. But I do believe that we have to, I think the fundamental point comes down to people now losing their own power. And so, again, if we step back into the medical profession, as I saw what happened with my dad when he was diagnosed with cancer, he's in the hospital room, okay, and he's put into a separate individual room, and they've run some tests on him, and then all of a sudden, you know, a doctor and three nurses file into the room, and they give this diagnosis, as you say, giving somebody a death sentence to live into. And the unfortunate part about it is that in that moment, my dad became crushed. You know, he lost all power because he's now subservient to the person in the white coat with a stethoscope around the neck and a degree on the wall that says, "I'm qualified to give you this death sentence." And so, all of a sudden, now my father loses his power to believe anything else other than what that person's told them. And this is what I don't think doctors really get when they're handing out, you know, these death sentences to people that they're living into, because it actually has been proven that, you know, the mind will create the circumstances that you feed it. So, you know, you've got this sort of scenario going on and people have lost all power. They're not strong enough to pull back and say, "Do you know what, actually, I don't agree with your diagnosis. I don't agree that XYZ treatment is the only way to deal with what I've got. I'm going to explore something different." And fair play to this lady you mentioned earlier, who's gone off on the route of cannabis oil and has actually found a cure as a result of that. Because that takes a very strong person to say, "Actually, I'm not buying into the system anymore. I'm going to choose an alternative." You know, and I have a great deal of respect for people that do that. You know, more and more, I'll just give you another example. If you've watched Jason Vale, Superduce Me, great documentary, absolutely incredible documentary. And I believe a lot of the things that we're struggling with in the Western society is down to our diet. You know, the fact that we consume very acidic foods. You know, we're living off tea and coffee, and this is coming from somebody who's, you know, 8 cups of tea and coffee a day kind of person. You know, that's something that we're doing, and then we're expecting our body not to break down, we're expecting our body not to rage, we're expecting our body not to develop disease. And So on Jason Vale's documentary Superducement, there was one gentleman there, phenomenal guy, you know, a Welshman there. He was on 52 tablets a day when he arrived. His skin was ashen grey. He was, bless him, a little balloon on legs. His body was just so toxic. And over the course of the treatment of being with Jason there, working with you know, medical supervision, by the end of the time at the camp there, he was down to 2 tablets a day. The colour was back in his face. The weight was just dropping off him. And the problem is you're taking one pill, and then you get side effects from that pill, so you have another load of pills to counteract the side effects of those. You
know, but they label them as side effects. They're not a side effect. They're causing.
It's a direct effect.
It's a direct effect. Absolutely. Not a side effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they wouldn't be there if you weren't putting them down your throat, would they?
Exactly right. And you know, you show me that the study that's being done of the impact of the human body taking 52 tablets a day. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I'm reading a book at the moment that says we've sort of devolved from living off cosmic energy, which is breath, to liquid, just water, through down from veganism, vegetarian, omnivores, and just carnivores. I don't think there's many of those about, but mainly omnivores.
Yep.
And this, what this book's saying is that we need to progress backwards in order for us to actually ascend ourselves. It's showing a lot of science there to back a lot of this stuff up.
Yep.
As you said, they're acidic foods. There's nothing more acidic than dairy, cheese, milk. Yep. And we've been told for decades that milk makes your bones strong.
Exactly right.
It's the complete opposite.
I bought into that for years.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's the complete opposite. And you do have to question. I mean, I do question, why on earth would they tell you things like that when they must know that that's not true?
Again, this is the whole thing, that we're being conditioned by a structure and a system that allows us to follow mainstream advice, or persuades us to follow mainstream advice, as it were. And you know, that can be as simple as, you know, go to school, get yourself a high paying job, retire happily ever after, and all that sort of great stuff. And it's the same with diet. You know, if you look at the health industry alone and the weight loss industry alone, there are millions of programs out there for people to follow, but it's actually quite simple. And what we're not being, well, the information that we're being kept away from is you know, great information around fasting, for example. You know, it was suggested that 3 days of fasting allows us to completely regenerate our immune system. No, I don't recall any doctor I've ever met giving me that advice. I don't remember that ever being mentioned at school.
No.
And this is where I feel a real tragedy happens in life, is that, again, we're being conditioned to move away from looking out for ourselves. You know, if you look at what most people do of an evening when they get back from work, TV goes on, you know, a couple of beers in front of the TV or whatever, or watch the footy, and all the rest of it. Sorry, mate.
I do like football.
But, you know... how different would life be if you went home and you've read a health book? Yeah, how different would life be if you went out and read some of the material that you're into right now, or spent a few hours on the internet, not on Facebook or Instagram or God knows what else, but actually getting involved with, you know, doing some reading and some research that would directly benefit your life. And I think that's the real tragedy that's going on right now. You know, TV, don't get me wrong, is great for being able to watch incredible programs. You know, you watch one of the Attenborough's on a nature program and see some of the things that we might never ever experience in our life is phenomenal, don't get me wrong. But then there's also a whole lot of stuff on there that, you know, we perhaps shouldn't be watching, and you know, that we occupy our time with. And don't get me wrong, I'm not, you know, saying that I'm better than anybody else in any way, shape or form. You know, I love to veg out in front of the TV occasionally and you know, watch a good movie or whatever else might be happening. But the flip side is, I do like to try and take quite a bit of time to read and to expose myself to information that is not of the mainstream view.
I've had a bit of a shocker with the microphones.
Yeah. No problem, mate. Yeah, I think that's the thing. You know, that's a fundamental message to a lot of people. There's so much value in reading. You know, I'm an avid collector of books. People say, "Oh, I don't like reading," or, you know, they've had an experience of being in the schooling system, which was not particularly great. They were told that they were stupid, or they've had some kind of peer figure which has suggested that they've been They're not particularly studious. I was a very, very average student all the way through school. Hated it, absolutely hated it. Didn't really understand it, didn't really get what it was all about. Some of the subjects that I thought I'd be really good at, like business studies, I was very, very average all the way through. In fact, I was failing for most of my most of my GCSEs and A-levels in business studies. And yet, you know, I've now come out and I'm an entrepreneur. I'm not saying I'm the best entrepreneur in the world. I'm really not. But you know, the point being is that we've got to get away from this whole culture and this whole setup that says, you know, you're going to go to an authoritarian figure who is then going to tell you how you should live your life.
Yeah.
And you know, it's took me a lot of years to get away from that. I was 28, I think, before I started my first adventure into doing business. And I wanted to be an entrepreneur at 16. And I've had to probably go through the last 10 years of reconditioning myself to just go, do you know what? I'm just going to go and do that. And I don't care necessarily what the consequences are. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, stealing cars or anything like this. I'm talking about, you know, I'm going to put some videos out there to the wider world. 10 years ago, I'd have been terrified to do that.
It's courage as well, and I think all courage gets knocked out of us as well, especially as we're growing up with kids.
Agreed.
A lot of the belief systems that we have are actually our parents and society's beliefs, and they're not ours. They're not what we'd actually choose if we had the choice.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah, I think courage is the major step. I know Dr. David Hawkins puts courage as the step from false to truth.
Agreed.
As soon as you have that.
Yeah.
And grow some balls, to be fair. I know it's... People, the feminist movement probably wouldn't like that, but you just need to grow up a little bit, some people, I think, and then stand in your own truth, and regardless of what other people think, sort of irrelevant, because they're more worried about what you're thinking of them, usually, aren't they?
I mean, let's look at that in isolation. You know, you get people there that are afraid to put a video out on Facebook, or they're afraid to follow their passion in some way because of what somebody else might say. And really and truthfully, that somebody else that might say something, yes, it might be your parents or whatever else it might be, but it might also be the fear of what somebody's going to type as a comment on your YouTube video. And really and truthfully, yeah, we've got all these keyboard warriors out there that are, you know, happy to fire off a comment and all the rest of it. But the truth of the matter is, if that person was sat in front of you, they probably wouldn't say what they were going to say on their YouTube comment. It's probably a knee-jerk reaction to something that's triggered them.
Yeah.
And actually, the real sad part about it is that most people don't really care enough about other people in any way, shape, or form. They're too busy with their own lives. They're too busy on Facebook. They're too busy absorbed in their own little insular bubble to even care really and truthfully about what you're doing. So just get on with it. Just do it.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. You've done a lot of self-help work, a lot of personal development yourself. Is there any places you'd recommend people to look at, or anything in particular that stood out for you?
Well, it's been quite a journey. I think my main personal development journey started, I can remember it right now actually, was Jim Rohn, Finding Jim Rohn. And I picked up his book in W.H. Smith's at the time, Seven Strategies to Wealth and Happiness. And I've got a huge amount of time for Jim Rohn and his teachings. I think he was probably the most authentic personal development teacher that we've ever seen.
Unfortunately, he was one of the first as well, wasn't he?
I'm one of the first, absolutely. And unfortunately, his protege, I don't feel, comes from the same camp.
Tony.
Big Phony Robbins. yeah. I don't have any time for Tony Robbins. I've never studied one of his programs. I just don't feel fundamentally he comes from the right place. And I know that's going to anger a huge amount of people in the personal development world because, you know, he's their idol. You know, but when somebody puts a video out there that says, you know, I am not your guru, basically saying I am your guru, to me there's a whole bunch of stuff going on there that just isn't authentic. So that's my take on that one. But I think Jim Rohn definitely was very, very instrumental. I went on a program called Landmark Forum as well. I do want to suggest that is very, very helpful to a lot of people. I wouldn't suggest the rest of Landmark's programs are as helpful, but certainly the forum is really quite enlightening. Because it looks at a lot of things that we would class as quite spiritual teachings in a quite a scientific way. And actually, the main fundamental part of the Landmark Forum is 3 days exploring what it is to be a human being and what it is to operate as a human being. And actually, that's hugely insightful because there were people on that weekend that, you know, I'm not allowed to tell you all of what was going on there, but some people have gone through some really, really tragic stuff and they were carrying it for years and years and years. And over the course of 3 days, they got complete with it. and they nice. Left it there. They, you know, they didn't carry it there. They didn't carry it in their lives further on, which is great. So that was tremendously helpful.
I've so done that's it. Landmark Forum.
Landmark Forum. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Cool. Well worth it. You know, I've done a huge amount of reading. If you ask me where all my money's gone over the course of the last year. You know, several
it's
years.
Bankrupt now because he's bought too many books.
Yeah, but this huge bookshelf. It's funny. You know, sometimes I go home and I just put the TV on. I don't have terrestrial TV or Sky or cable or anything like that. I just literally watch you know, films and bits and pieces. And my TV is right above my bookcase, and I just keep looking at this guilt pile of you know, guilt list of all these different books that I haven't yet read. But yeah, I do believe spending some time solitary. Reading is a phenomenal way for people to really educate themselves and take themselves forward way more. And I love talking about a great book. I mean, you share some of the stuff that you've read in different books, and it's like, that's exciting. I just had the four books that arrived yesterday.
That you booked last week.
Yeah, that I bought on Thursday when we had our last get together, because I think that there's a lot of merit. And when you think about a book, you know, you might go and pay, let's say, £10-15 for a book, and you've had an insight into that person's life of probably the best years of their life and experience. And you get to immerse yourself in that person's world for what, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, whatever, however long it takes you to read that book. But you get all of their knowledge and experience of the last 10 years in a book. I think that's phenomenal value.
It is.
It really is. You know, compared to what you might pay to go on a seminar or all this, that, and the other. And don't get me wrong, you know, there's some books that I've read that are horrendous, that are really poorly written. Wouldn't give you a thank you for them, but you know, the majority of people, I believe, that are releasing a book have done it authentically. They've done it in a really good way, which is you know, to put the heart and soul into it, and that's you know, you're getting all that value for, you know, 10 or 15 quid. It's better than a night out at the cinema.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, I've read a little bit of fiction as well recently, where the message in the fiction has been phenomenal, because I've always sort of moved away from fiction, more towards non-fiction and yep. learning and everything Agreed. Else. Ayn Rand, I don't know if you've heard of Ayn Rand.
You mentioned
political philosophy. She's very, very good. Mm-hmm. She wrote a book called The Fountainhead. Okay. Highly recommend that to people. She doesn't like far left socialism, so if you're a Marxist, probably don't read it.
Right.
But yeah, highly recommend her. She's a phenomenal writer, great philosophy.
It's like Will Smith. I mean, he talks about his favourite book being The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. And there's a huge amount of truth, and not just make it all about my book, but one of the reasons I wrote Love is the New Religion the way I did was to build in that that fable, that storyline around it. Because the way I see it being read is that there'll be two groups of people that will read that book. Somebody might take it away with them on a holiday, and they'll lie by the pool, and they'll read a book, and they'll have an enjoyable experience over the course of, you know, that week of being involved in that book. But I hope it will plant seeds. I hope it will, you know, really start to allow people to wake up. And those people that are already, you know, quite awake, they'll be able to read that book and they'll see a whole bunch of other stuff. And you could read it maybe 2 or 3 times and you'll see different levels of learning all the way through. But it's, I think it's been structured in such a way that it really kind of helps people find their truth.
Yeah, cool. What one piece of advice would you give to somebody, the average mum or dad,
mm-hmm.
to make them possibly just think for themselves or to remove themselves from their own conditioning just for 10 minutes or something? What piece of advice would you give?
Wow, that's really deep. Here's probably where I go with it. And I'm not a parent, so I'm commenting from an outsider's perspective here, but I hear a lot of people when they become parents and they say this classic line of, oh, I'm going to give my children everything that I never had. And so they sacrifice a huge amount of their time, energy, money, whatever else it might be, to look after these children, when a lot of the time all the children want is their parents' attention, their parents' love, their parents' connection. And that can be as simple as, you know, hiding under the stairs or whatever, playing hide and seek, whatever it might be. But I also, if you were to ask your parent, if you were to ask your children, what is it they truly want? They would want you to be happy as parents. You know, they probably wouldn't want you working all the extra overtime to afford the holiday in Mauritius or whatever else it might be. They probably would say to you, look, I just want you to be happy. I want you to take time for you. And I think that's what a lot of us are really good at not doing. I'm actually reading a really good book, which I highly recommend to yourself as well. It's called Your Oxygen Mask First. And it talks about, you know, this mindset of, you know, people that are out there, they're trying to achieve great things in the world. But actually, the conventional wisdom that we've been given is what's really holding us back, is what's really sort of bogging us down. And it really is about how to look at life in a very, very different way. And part of that is actually learning to nurture and look after ourselves. And, you know, I'm quite fortunate the way I spend my days at the moment. I usually spend at least an hour a day walking in nature, and that really is my meditation. It's when I'm at my most creative in my mind. It's when I'm at there's nothing bothering me. The phone always goes off, and I just go out there and I enjoy a really good walk in nature. And that to me is hugely therapeutic in a lot of ways. And I think that self-nurture, it's a journey. It's really important for us all to embrace.
Yeah, me too. You mentioned the meditation there. I think that people get a lot very et up with that. They see it's a bit of a craze, isn't it? Meditate, whatever. But I think that's a great example where you don't need to sit there, lotus position, and sit there for 2 hours and try and find God in that 2 hours or whatever. You could just literally go, don't listen to anything, don't read nothing, just get through nature, be present in the moment and see what crops up. I think it was Kipling, the poet. He said something like, "If you sit there and look at a tree, you'll get more from that from any book you'll ever read in your life." Or something along those lines.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I can really vouch for that. I'm very fortunate. We have some really nice woodland near us, and the last couple of weeks where the weather's been really great, we've been out there walking, and the dog takes the lead, and I'm just there and I'm listening to the stillness. I'm listening to the quiet. I'm listening to the birds singing. And then, very, very occasionally we'll come across, a deer, a magnificent beast, and you just look at that. Now, it got me thinking the other day about, people who dispute the fact that there is a God or there is a higher intelligence or a higher being in some way. And, my view, I looked at this, there was this small oak tree that was growing, and I thought, you know what, you look at a magnificent oak tree, might have been there for 150 years or whatever it might be, and that has come from this tiny, tiny acorn. And, for those of people that are more science-based, I'm just going to say synthesize me an oak tree. From nothing, from scratch, synthesize me an oak tree. Yeah, create something in a shell that will grow into a magnificent oak tree. And where we are with technology as far as that's concerned, I'm not going to get into, genetics and all that sort of genetical engineering, all that sort of thing. But if you look at synthesizing an oak tree, create that. And then you come back and tell me that there isn't a higher power, there isn't something...
An intelligence.
Yeah, yeah. And every blade of grass that effortlessly grows around the planet, you and I probably couldn't take care of, a single plant, on our windowsill. And yet effortlessly around the world, day after day, year after year, you've got all these blades of grass growing, you've got all these beautiful flowers. And the buttercups that are out right now by us, the fields of them. You look at where the farmers create their fields and all this stuff that just grows out of nothing, out of these tiny little seeds, and you think, there's got to be something.
Well, in the Bible, I think it mentions the mustard seed in the mountain. And I think that's sort of what the point he's trying to get to. You ever looked at the sky and the birds? There's a flock of birds, and they're instantaneously moving with each other.
Yep.
And you're thinking, there's no way the brain can create that. There's
not
no way. It's instantaneous. Yeah. There's not any time between the one bird doing it and the other.
You look at the red arrows and how often and how regularly they have to go through their training time and time and time again to get those planes to move in uniform fashion. And nature does it in a heartbeat. You see it with shoals of fish in the ocean. You see it with, as you say, birds, a swarm of bees, whatever it might be. Turn in a heartbeat and it's all synchronized. It's all together. So there's got to be something more going on.
Yeah. You can get lost thinking about it. I think that may be the problem with religion. Back to the beginning is that man's tried to put man's mind onto infinite. I don't think he can.
We can't comprehend it.
Do that.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about science. Now we've gone down that route.
Science, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of it's not... unknown knowledge that a lot of science is paid for. You can find that on a Google search. That's not difficult to find.
Mm-hmm.
But the realm of materialism, the mask of materialism seems to be being peeled off at the moment. I see I've got a couple of scientist friends who are at university, and they're saying that they're being told that materialism isn't actually what we thought it was even 10 years ago. I mean, that's a in my opinion, that's a very positive step forward.
Agreed.
obviously we've been stuck in the Newtonian linear paradigm for thousands of years, hundreds of years now. What's your take on the maybe the shift from materialism to nonlinear dynamics?
If I'm understanding you correctly, I mean, materialism is quite inherent, I think, in our human makeup. So, you know, you or I see a fast car drive down the road, or maybe not so much you, but certainly me. You know, you see a fast car drive down the road, there is a desire to want to experience everything that car can give you. And, you know, for me, certainly, I've driven fast cars, absolutely love the experience of it, would have one tomorrow, you know, if the situation's allowed. But the point being, I know fundamentally that that isn't going to give me anywhere near as much satisfaction, anywhere near as much joy as, you know, an hour's walk through the forest with my dog. Okay, and that's taken almost 20 years of growing up to try and achieve. So I think there is a shift, and I think more and more people are realizing that there is this kind of awakening, or, you know, people are realizing that actually, what would I rather have? Do I want to tie myself to a position with a company that allows me to earn £100,000 a year and live in XYZ house and do this, this, and this, but I'm unhappy? Or would I rather do my own thing and I might be earning £25,000 a year, but at the end of the day, I'm happier? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really is the fundamental shift that a lot of people will make in the beginning, and that can lead to a very, very different life than the one ancestors have lived in a very different way. And I think once we're happier, we're more at peace. There's a lot of natural benefits that come from that. I mean, for instance, when I left the corporate world, I kid you not, it took me probably 9 months for the adrenaline to leave my body, from getting up at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning to leave the house at 6:40 to make it into Birmingham for 9 o'clock. You know, it was a bizarre kind of ritual that I was living for several years. And then when I left that environment, I remember, you know, my heart was just racing. I had 3 heart scans before I was 30, you know, because my heart was just absolutely pumping with all the adrenaline and the caffeine I was consuming and all this, that, and the other. Yeah. And, you know, stepping off that treadmill, would I ever want to go back to that? Not a chance. Do I want to do stuff that I enjoy? Yeah, of course I do. You know, and literally I did a video about this the other day where I talked about, you know, this vision I had in my 20s was all this magnificent materialism, this great big house and all these different cars and all the holidays and everything else. And yeah, don't get me wrong, part of me still wants that. But would I rather have a log cabin in the mountains in Canada and just, you know, sit there and write every day to my heart's content and enjoy the sounds of nature? There's no comparison.
I mean, I fell into that trap a couple of times where I'm in the day-to-day business and whatever's going on. And then I'll have like a week where I'll be like, I could just go and live in the Himalayas here.
Yep.
But then I have the feeling that I'm running away. So it's like a guilt, I suppose. I suppose it's a guilt feeling where I can't just leave everything, you know? So I think there's a fine line to be drawn between this. And a lot of people will be questioning, how can we monetize what we love to do? And I think that's a question. I can't pick a book or an article that's actually nailed that for me, I don't think.
I'd agree. There's probably, you know, several books that have been written by people that are talking about it, but not one that actually really communicates it well. I would agree with you fundamentally. I don't think there is and I also think maybe it's partly a mistake. People say, do what you love and the money will follow. That's something that we hear a lot of. I think monetizing stuff that you love for the sake of monetizing it is actually more of a problem. And I wouldn't personally pursue that. I think there might be different stages that you're at in your life. It might be that you're running a full-time job right now and you've got to do that to keep bread on the table and roof over your head and all the rest of it. But you might love DJing or writing or riding horses or whatever else it might be. So find some space at least in your week to do that, a couple of hours a week or a couple of hours a month even. Bizarrely, one of my greatest pleasures is chopping wood. I know it sounds crazy. It's just one of those weird things. Do I need any money to do that? No, not at all. How often do I do it? Once or twice a year?
Yeah.
Very therapeutic.
Yeah,
that's
all
you need.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of that where that I'm seeing in the world at the moment. I think it can be a big mistake to try and monetize straight away.
Agreed.
Do it for the health benefits or the emotional benefits that you're going to get from it. And then if somebody buys one of those paintings and pays you $10,000 for it,
that's it. I think the subtle shift as well from doing it to fulfill yourself to doing it to serve it's a very subtle thing, but as soon as, I can speak from experience, as soon as it actually clicks, synchronicity starts to happen around you. And certain, I think Peter Sage uses the analogy that you might be in Starbucks and someone drops the credit card or something, and then you end up speaking to the person, and that's the exact person that you need in order to fulfill whatever's going on in the business at the time. And, and I can speak from experience where things like that do occur when you move from doing it for yourself in order now to make money or whatever, to how can I serve this person? And I think that's that intelligence again that you mentioned earlier.
Agreed.
The intelligence behind that, sort of, okay, yeah, we're sort of doing it for everybody else now, let's help him.
Agreed. I think there's one of the lessons that I've learned, sort of following on from that, is getting yourself out of your own way, or getting yourself out of the way and allowing life to sort of open up and serve you. And it can be so difficult sometimes where we, you know, because we're taught through a lot of personal development books, we've got to have this white hot burning desire, and we've got to go out there, and we've got to wrestle and grapple control with everything. And really, nothing could be further from the truth. And when you're in a relaxed state of mind, and when you're pretty focused on service to others, that's when I think you see the bigger wins coming through, the right connections being made, the right people coming into your life, the right scenarios unfolding. Very much so.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe we're doing an hour and 20 minutes.
Sounds
I think
good.
It's time to wrap up.
Happy to be completely in your hands, whatever you want to do.
One book that you would recommend people, one article or video that you would recommend to people?
Wow. I'm going to go with a slightly unconventional one. It is a video, so it's quite easy watch. It's called it's Steve Jobs. He did his Stanford address, and that's on YouTube. Highly recommend it to people because that really puts life into perspective. And I won't spoil it for you, but it's, you know, Steve Jobs was a pretty iconic figure, and it was the Stanford address that he did there. He was a pretty iconic figure, and he sort of brings a lot of his knowledge and experience into that one video there, and it's very very heartwarming to watch, and it also puts a lot of things into perspective.
And he's changed the face of the planet, to be fair, to many jobs with Apple. We wouldn't be doing this podcast now without Steve Jobs, so we're very grateful for him.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about when the iPhone was first released, you had the ability to make a face-to-face phone call with somebody on the other side of the world, you know, and that is an incredible leap forward in my view. And so, you know, look at what that one person has been able to achieve. Now, was he happy? You know, did he have everything he ever wanted in his life? There's a whole bunch of other stuff we could talk about there, but that's beyond the point of where I'm taking that. That I think for most people will really give a lot of perspective to people's lives.
Cool. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you. Really enjoyed
Thanks
it.
Thanks a lot for listening, everybody.
My pleasure.
And make sure you ask for that vaccine insert.
Top advice. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.